Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's Current Sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. But I look good. I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? It's about that time. Happy hump day to you all. That's right. It's Wednesday, May 29th, 2019. The second show of the week here on WKAR's Current Sports. Of course, Monday was Memorial Day, so you have a shortened week for most of you out there. I mean, some still had to work on Monday. For those who did, I feel a bit bad for you. But hey, happy Wednesday. All right, two more days into the weekend. Just get over the hump, baby. All right, we've got a great hour of Current Sports coming your way, filled with some interesting topics. I'm going to dive into the whole Magic Johnson and L.A. Lakers bombshell piece that ESPN put together. Yes, it feels like for like at least the last, I want to say, 4 to 5 weeks, I have come on the air, opened up my mic and said, guess what else happened when it comes to the L.A. Lakers organization? I kid you not. I feel like every week I'm saying, oh, it can't get worse than this. It can't get worse than this. It can't get worse than this. And then all of a sudden, a new article comes out or something is said or Magic Johnson does an interview or you hear a rumor there, you hear a rumor here. It's getting crazy. And yesterday was one of the more dark. They've all been dark, let's be real. But this was very detailed. This piece that was put together by ESPN was very detailed and gave you a behind-the-scenes look into just how bad this situation is. I mean, this story was everywhere, and debate shows from here to Pluto talking about this story. Magic Johnson was so ticked off about the piece that he had to come out and clear his name yet again, and he denies alleged abuse from employees within the organization. Kobe Bryant was also named, and he was reportedly furious that he was named in the report. It's gotten so bad, folks. And you look at LeBron James, who is right now the face of the franchise, player-wise, I guess you can say. And, he's trying to deflect that thing and trying to hold it together. You know, he posted a video of him, like, in a shootout with a 14-year-old top prospect. I mean, he's trying to keep it together. I think he's trying to just ignore it and just, on his end, make it seem like everything is still rainbows and roses when it's clearly not. I can only imagine what's going through LeBron's head and the conversations that he's having amongst his players, his fellow teammates. It's really bad. But I want to just kind of go through a bit of what that piece detailed. And I'll tell you what Magic Johnson had to say concerning, again, alleged abuse when it comes to employees of the organization. Okay, he was compelled to defend himself yet again. All right, so we'll get to that. Also want to touch on the new president of Michigan State University. And, you know, we detail, the hiring of Samuel L. Stanley yesterday. Our news team was at the Board of Trustees meeting yesterday morning. You heard raw audio of what Samuel L. Stanley had to say during his appointment as Michigan State's 21st president. And you also heard what his thoughts are
on Michigan State athletics. And I want to kind of further dive into that component of things because Samuel L. Stanley has a really interesting track record when it comes to his relationship with athletics as president during his 10 years as president of Stony Brook in New York. And I want to kind of comb through that, and maybe that can give us a bit of a window through the eyes of which, you know, Samuel Stanley is looking at MSU athletics from, and what could possibly be on the horizon for MSU athletics with his hiring. Okay, so we'll get to that. And then on the back end of the show, he's a busy man, and he may be in a meeting. It may run long, so we just have him on standby. All right, we hope to have Jason Ruff, play-by-play voice of the Jackalopes, on the show with us. And Jason Ruff is of course, going to the Odessa Jackalopes. He's going to, of course, dive into some hockey as game two tonight of the Stanley Cup Finals take place between the Boston Bruins and the St. Louis Blues. And the Bruins control, really, my opinion. I got a chance to check some of that game out. Just about every facet of the game in that series opening win. And I want to get Jason's thoughts on game two. What can we expect, and what does game one mean, if anything, as we approach game two tonight? All right? So all of that and more, if you would like to be a part of the hour, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Go to facebook.com/WKAR News. You can watch the live stream there and comment below the live stream if you have any thoughts. Or you can tweet us. Tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR News. Here are your quick hit headliners. Okay, the Diamond Classic resumes tonight. It will be semifinal action taking place at McLane Stadium, home of the Michigan State baseball team, and the annual showcase of some of Lansing's top baseball teams will feature a former major leaguer making a guest appearance. How about this? Former Detroit Tigers catcher and third baseman Brandon Inge will be at the Diamond Classic tonight to throw out the first pitch prior to the scheduled 7 p.m. semifinal game featuring the top two teams in the CAAC Red, Mason and Williamson. So Brandon Inge making an appearance tonight. And I believe some of the backstory as to how Brandon Inge, how this whole thing came about, is the PA announcer knows Brandon and, you know, just kept in touch with him. And Brandon Inge agreed to come on out and throw out the first pitch of that game. So at 5 p.m. prior to Williamson and Mason, you can catch Lansing Catholic versus Grand Ledge. That will be your 5 p.m. game. And, of course, the winner of Lansing Catholic and Grand Ledge and Williamson and Mason, the two winners of that game will play in the Diamond Classic Championship, which is slated for Monday, June 3rd at 7 p.m. All right, so it should be a fun night of baseball. Cross your fingers that it doesn't rain. All right, that's the big thing, because it's not, you know, it's kind of cloudy, a bit overcast. It is scheduled to rain in about 2 hours. Hopefully it clears up, though, by game time. All right, the Detroit Tigers, they were able to snap that losing streak and beat the Baltimore Orioles 3-0. The final in that win, the Tigers now sitting at 20-32, so 12 games below 500. And they will take on the Orioles again tonight at 7:05 p.m. to cap off that series on the road. And then from there, they will take on the Atlanta Braves on the 31st. So we'll see what happens tonight. See if the Tigers can string together a win streak. All right. The Detroit Pistons front office is losing the man who helped develop ESPN's trade machine. That's right. Two league sources told the Detroit Free Press that assistant general manager Sachin Gupta is leaving to join the Minnesota Timberwolves. Now, the Athletic's Shams Karyana reports that Gupta is being hired as vice president of basketball operations under recently hired team president Gersan Rosas. The team worked together with the Houston Rockets, where Rosas spent 17 seasons. So, a lot of people don't know that. Yeah, Sachin Gupta, he was the developer of ESPN's trade machine. He's a really smart dude. And, he would put together this machine that kind of put together all these different scenarios. And it let fans go to a website and engineer like imaginary trades. So, which, of course, became very, very popular. So, and it's still a hit. You know, people still use it. People still go into the trade machine of ESPN and still play around with it and play around with different scenarios. All right. Michigan basketball's defensive coordinator appears to be moving on. According to a report from CBS Sports, assistant coach Luke Yaklich is heading to Texas, where he will join the staff of Shaka Smart. Now, Yaklich had previously interviewed with Texas for an assistant coaching job. That's according to the Austin American-Statesman. He also interviewed for U of M's vacant head coaching job after former coach John Beilein decided to chuck up the deuces and go to the National Basketball Association to coach the Cleveland Cavaliers. Of course, that job eventually went to Juwan Howard. Now, the move would end a two-year tenure at Michigan, in which Yaklich helped build one of the nation's top defenses at a program that had not been known for its prowess on that end of the floor. So,
finito.
Luke Yaklich is heading to Texas underneath Shaka Smart. All right, the Gavitt Tip-Off Games are the annual eight-game series played between the Big Ten Conference and the Big East Conference. Now, the Wolverines, Michigan, were a participant last season, beating Villanova 73-46 at Finneran Pavilion out in Philly. This will be Michigan State's first appearance. That's right, the Spartans playing in the Gavitt Games. First appearance in the Gavitt Games, which began actually in 2015. So I'll just kind of go through the lineup real quick here. Villanova this year will take on Ohio State, Michigan State at Seton Hall, Creighton at Michigan, Purdue at Marquette, Providence at Northwestern, Penn State at Georgetown, Minnesota at Butler, and DePaul at Iowa. And looking at a few preseason rankings in the world of college basketball right now concerning that Michigan State and Seton Hall matchup, a lot of people are pretty high on Seton Hall, actually. You know, Seton Hall, I've been reading, is a predicted. Now, again, it's way too early to start talking about this, right? But a lot of publications have Seton Hall listed as a 3 seed come next year's NCAA tournament. So take that what you will. But Seton Hall should be a solid matchup for the Spartans. Okay, as I mentioned, the Stanley Cup Finals resume tonight. Can the St. Louis Blues even up the series on the road as they take on the Boston Bruins? Bruins taking game one. Well, as you hear our engineer of the Wednesday edition of WKAR's Current Sports, Jack Kerwin, does not believe so. Why not, Jack? You know, do you think the Blues have a chance in this series?
I want to believe that they do. I'm pulling for the Blues hard. But, I mean, no, Boston has just been so dominant. They've won 8 playoff games in a row. That just doesn't happen in hockey very often. And, I mean, St. Louis got out to a 2-0 lead right at the beginning of the second period, and it was pretty even at that point. I think shots were about 9 apiece, and then I think they just kind of thought the game was over, and they got, I mean, it was brutal the last 40 minutes of that game, the way the Bruins controlled pace, and the Blues were completely hemmed in. So I am not optimistic for St. Louis.
Yeah, and the little that I saw of that game, what I was hearing from the commentators and what I read the following day, Boston completely dominated. So we'll see what happens, man. But it's hockey. Like, anything happen in hockey, right? I mean, it's hockey. Also, you note here in our headliners, Jack, that Barstool Sports is providing the rally towels at TD Garden tonight. So how did that come about? Barstool is providing, like, memorabilia for fans now?
I saw it on Twitter. I mean, I have the tweet posted here that the Bruins, I just saw them tweeted out earlier today that Boston will be. I mean, their guys from Boston and St. Louis will be in attendance for the game tonight. It's kind of something they do where, you know, when a team makes the finals that anybody's a fan of, the city they're from, they usually get to go to a championship game. And obviously with Boston being in the championship and them being Boston-based, most of the big guys will be there. And then there are a couple guys from St. Louis who work for Barstool as well. So they'll all be in attendance. And, yeah, I guess they're just providing rally towels for tonight's game.
Nice. I like the rally towels. They look pretty cool from the snippet that I see. And, it, of course, Barstool, a great promotion for them because they have their logo right beneath the Boston Bruins 2019 playoff logo. So there you have that. Okay. And again, we hope to have Jason Ruff on the show as well. Jason Ruff is the director of broadcasting and media relations for the Odessa Jackalopes, play-by-play voice for the Odessa Jackalopes. Jason, we hope, can join us on the back end of the show to get his thoughts on tonight's Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Finals. And the NBA Finals don't tip off until tomorrow. It's been oh so long, it feels. I'm missing basketball right now. According to Vegas, Golden State Warriors superstar Steph Curry is the betting favorite to be named as NBA Finals MVP, an honor that has eluded the two-time MVP and three-time champion. Kevin Durant was the finals MVP in 2017 and 2018. He is ruled out for game one with that strained calf against the Toronto Raptors. His status for the rest of the series remains unknown. And Caesars is apparently offering 18-1 odds on Durant, given that he might not even suit up for a single game. And yeah, it's just so tough to come back from a strained right calf. I was listening to an interview this morning with Jeff Van Gundy, former coach in the NBA, now turned broadcaster alongside Mark Jackson. And, you know, he was just talking about how he's had players that he's coached with strained calves, and they have just, you know, been out for a long, long time. So, and Warriors forward Andre Iguodala, he won the NBA Finals MVP in 2015, becoming the only award winner to not start in every game of the series. Iguodala was in the neighborhood of a 125-1 long shot in offshore betting markets. Finals MVP odds were not offered in Nevada until 2017. So again, game one of the finals, Warriors and Raptors, tomorrow night in Toronto. Should be a fun game. Also, as I mentioned, Magic Johnson, he denies the abuse of employees. Speaking to a pair of former co-workers at ESPN, Magic Johnson refuted allegations published earlier in the day in an ESPN.com story that he repeatedly berated and mistreated employees during his 2 years as the president of basketball operations for the Los Angeles Lakers. Now, after ESPN host Stephen A. Smith summarized the, quote, behind-the-scenes turmoil, the report detailed in the Lakers front office, Johnson issued a blanket denial. He said, quote, I never sat in an HR person's office for 35 years. Do you think Jeannie Buss, the current owner of the L.A. Lakers, will allow me to abuse employees? If that was the case, she would have called me in. It never happened. I have more thoughts on this ESPN.com bombshell of a story that, again, alleges that Magic Johnson was abusive to his employees. I have more on that in about 10 minutes. And also want to pass this story along to you guys. The 19-year-old security guard who was knocked over by Dallas Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott at a Las Vegas music festival earlier this month, he is seeking an apology from Zeke. In an interview with KCBS-TV out in L.A., Kyle Johnson said he didn't want to make a, quote, rash decision that soon, end quote, when the incident happened at 3 in the morning and decided not to press charges against Elliott at the time. He added that he doesn't know whether or not he would press charges now that he's more than a week removed from the event. Johnson also said part of the reason he didn't make a bigger deal of the situation when it happened was that he knew of Elliott's disciplinary history with the league. Quote, and didn't want to make any more trouble, end quote, for Elliott. The running back, if you remember, was suspended 6 games in the middle of 2017 for violating the league's personal conduct policy in relation to an alleged domestic violence incident. I'm curious, Jack, if you were that security guard and you get knocked over and you know it's Zeke Elliott, a multi-million dollar big time athlete, and you get knocked over, you wasn't causing any trouble, but he knocks you over, would you cry, oh, my neck, my back, I need some money?
That's an interesting question.
Would you be that guy? You probably get some nice change on the
side, man. I guess it depends. In this scenario, yeah, I probably would, because, I mean, the security guard was legitimately not doing anything.
Right.
I mean, if you watch the video, he just got knocked over. If I got in a fight with Zeke Elliott and he kicked my butt, I don't think I would be pressing charges at that point because he's a pro athlete. So,
you wouldn't? No. But then I think about days after, and you probably got, like, family members and your homies saying, man, that could be some nice money, dude. We can go on vacation this summer. You might reconsider. I'm pretty sure there's some people in his ear saying that to him right now.
Yeah, you're probably right. That's shady, though.
It is. That's it's so shady. It's so shady, but, you know, some people are willing to go down there. They're willing to go down that rabbit hole. Okay. That's an interesting question. That may be our question of the day right there.
Would you?
No, I'm not that. I would think about it. Not even gonna lie. I would think about it, but I couldn't live with myself. My moral compass wouldn't allow me to, I don't think.
What if you were the security guard here, though, and Zeke just knocked you over? Would you press charges?
Because it depends on the situation as well. Because I wouldn't do it. If you look at the video, he wasn't doing anything.
He wasn't doing anything.
He was standing there, and he knocks you over like that. I may be so mad, and I'm like, yeah. I need something out of this, you know? So, and Zeke just still does not learn, man, I tell you. So, yeah, maybe. I don't know. That's a really good question, man. All right. That does it for your Quick Hit Headliners. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Go to facebook.com/WKAR News or tweet us. Tweet the show at WKAR News or tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR. All right, folks, before I want to touch on this, you know, we detailed this story during yesterday's Current Sports. Our fantastic WKAR News team was present at the Board of Trustees meeting on Tuesday morning that appointed the 21st president of Michigan State University. And I want to kind of go through in just a moment, you know, Samuel L. Stanley's history as it pertains to his leadership and athletics and what it could possibly mean for Michigan State athletics later on down the road. But two things I do want to note, and I just briefly want to get your thoughts on this, Jack, because I'm sure you were watching. That Torrey Krug hit on Robert Thomas on Monday. I mean, I saw that and said, I got chills, dude. I mean, I'm like, that's what I like about hockey. I'll watch. If every hockey game had that kind of a hit, I'm watching every game. I mean, that's the world we live in. And I'm a boxing fan and an MMA fan as well. I saw that hit. That, like, became, like I think, the signature moment of the Stanley Cup.
So far.
Final
yeah.
So far, right? It's only game one, but... Gosh, that was unreal. And I've been seeing this debate out there. I thought it was completely clean.
Yeah.
But some people out there are saying that, you know, Torrey Krug needs to be disciplined
nope.
for that hit. Like, what do they mean? What are you
no,
talking about?
No, they would have said that It would have been charging, but Torrey Krug was basically gliding from the blue line, and he didn't leave his feet for the hit.
Right.
Principal contact was not to the head. It was a very clean play, a very tough play, considering he already lost his helmet during that shift.
Right.
Pop quiz for you. Where did Terry Crews go to college? Terry Crews. Where did Torrey Krug?
I love Terry Crews.
Where did Torrey Krug go to college?
Oh, he's a Spartan, of course.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to mention that in just a second. Yeah, Torrey Krug. We were really close to having him on the show a few times, actually, and then when he went to the National Hockey League. By the way, I mean, my goodness. I mean, he's like, he just came into the league and it was seamless for him. It was really easy.
Went undrafted and he was
right.
An elite offensive defenseman as soon as he got to the NHL.
Unreal. Unreal, man. He didn't need any adjustment, it seemed like, at all. So, yeah, Torrey Krug, that hit. I mean, even, you know, our very own Brad Walker, he came to my office and he said, the hit. And I already knew what he was talking about. I mean, I was sitting there with my family and that highlight popped up and I immediately went on social media and wow. That was pretty sick. So I have to mention that moment. We got so caught up with the presidential, news about MSU and the new president that I didn't even bring that up, but I wanted to bring that up because that was huge. Also, real quick here, I just want to go through these. I want to have some fun with these real briefly. You see these articles from time to time during the dead period in sports. Like right now, I mean, you know, I should say local sports because, of course, you got the Stanley Cup Finals taking place, the NBA Finals tip off tomorrow. You know, also here locally as well, you got the Diamond Classic taking place. But you don't have, you know, Michigan State sports really popping right now. College sports is not happening. It's the downtime, right? And I know many of you out there are just chomping at the bit, foaming at the mouth, waiting for next season's Michigan State football year. So you start to see articles like this to kind of like, you know, wet your beak a little bit. You'll see occasionally a beat writer put out an article that kind of catches your eye and gets you to think and gets you to engage and, you know, get you excited about next season. So my guy, Matt Charbonneau, he's one of my favorite guys in local media. He is a Michigan State beat writer for the Detroit News, does an awesome job. We've had him on the show multiple times. Love seeing him on the beat. He wrote a piece, oh boy, I want to say like, what, 3 days ago now? Yeah, the 26th. So 3 days ago, entitled 10 Bold Predictions for Michigan State Football in 2019. So again, don't take these predictions to heart and go up in arms and say, what? He's crazy. I mean, that's what the article is about. That's why he says 10 bold predictions. If he said 10 predictions, that totally changes the tone of the piece. But 10 bold predictions, meaning that most, if not all of these, are going to be reaching just a bit. So real quick, Jack, I just want to kind of pour through these, and we'll just get, you know, thoughts off the top of the dome.
Yeah, let's do it.
Sound good? Number one, Brian Lewerke will be first team all Big Ten. First thought when I hear that, that's not out of the realm of possibility. I'll say that because last year was so, it was unfair to Brian Lewerke. I'll just say that. We talked about that in detail here on the show. The coaching staff putting him out on the field when he was not 100% healthy. It was not fair to Brian, all right? And the criticism that he got left and right, the dude just wasn't healthy. I mean, especially, if you know, he had a bum arm. So if you have a bum throwing arm, and as quarterback, you need your arm to throw the football, that's what you do, then how can we legitimately sit back and throw stones at the guy? So Brian Lewerke, 2 years ago, he was fantastic. Consistent, had zip on the ball. And I saw some NFL-type throws from time to time. If he can get back to that Brian Lewerke and is 100% healthy, and we saw a bit of that in the spring game, he looked pretty healthy in the spring game, I don't think that's crazy in saying that Brian Lewerke could be a first-team All-Big Ten selection. What do you say?
Well, I haven't seen it from him enough to where I'm going to give him the doubt, or give him the benefit of the doubt, I should say. But what I will say is definitely the turnover you've had in the Big Ten at the quarterback position. You know, Clayton Thorson isn't there anymore. Dwayne Haskins isn't there anymore. You know, it's not necessarily outside the realm of possibility, I think. I mean, if you were to ask people right now who cover teams in the Big Ten who the first team all Big Ten quarterback favorite is, it would probably be Justin Fields from Ohio State, who hasn't played a down in the Big Ten yet.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, I definitely think it's there for the taking if Brian can have a bounce back year. I mean, Shea Patterson and Ann Arbor is definitely a candidate as well. But no, I don't think that's outside the realm of possibility. Some of these predictions are a little too bold for me. This one, not so much.
Number two is one of the ones that's just too bold for me. A running back will gain 1,000 yards. I don't know about that, Jack. I don't even think we know who the running – we don't know who the running – the number one running back is right now.
No, no, we certainly don't.
It's up in the air.
And moving on from LJ Scott, I mean, it's certainly right. – you'd think it would be running back by committee, and I just – I can't make this prediction when I have no idea who the running back's going to be.
Exactly.
You know, I don't think Connor Hayward's a guy who's going to rush for 1,000 yards in the Big Ten. I wasn't, you know, overly impressed by Ladarius Jefferson last year. I think he had some potential.
Yep.
But, I mean, he'd need to take another huge step from there. And then the other thing is, too, I'm not big on this offensive line.
That's another thing, too.
So much of that is out of the running back's hands, being able to get to 1,000 yards. Yeah, no, this one's a no for me.
That's a huge reach for me as well, Jack. And just the fact that, you look at how inept that offense was last year. And now, Mark D'Antonio is run heavy. He's an old school guy. He'd rather run the ball 60 times than put it up in the air the majority of the time, right? But I just don't see. We don't know who the guy is. All right, real quick. Three, Cody White will lead MSU in receiving and contemplate leaving for the NFL. So, as Matt notes here, White was on the sidelines for four games last season. He was injured. He had 42 catches, 555 yards, a couple of TDs in nine games. And he is a favorite target of Brian Lewerke. I think that he could lead MSU in receiving yards. Felton Davis is also gone, too. That's such an unfortunate story for Felton as well. But contemplate leaving for the NFL? I don't know about that one.
I don't see him as a big-time NFL prospect yet, at least.
I don't either. I need to see more of him. But he could lead MSU in receiving, though.
I would say he'd be my pick, too, absolutely. I think he's the best receiver still on this roster. Now, it'll be interesting to see what Brad Salem does, because I know he was more of a spread guy, mm-hmm. you know, during his time, I think, at the D2 level as an offensive coordinator.
Right.
And if he favors more, you know, spread tendencies, then I think you might see guys like Daryl Stewart or Jalen Naylor especially, because I think Jalen Naylor is going to be a huge weapon this year.
Right.
Could get the ball a little bit more if, you know, they favor the short and intermediate game. But State's always aired the ball out, you know, with Mark D'Antonio at the helm. And, I mean, I think Cody White's probably the best deep receiver. No, he's definitely the best deep receiver on the roster that we know of right now. So, yeah, I would think Cody White will lead MSU in receiving.
I think he does lead MSU in receiving, but as far as contemplating the NFL, I don't know about that one. Okay. Four, the offense will finish in the top half of the Big Ten in scoring. That's a 50-50. That could go either way, Jack, because, again, it all depends on Brian Lewerke and if he has that offense humming. If we see the Brian Lewerke from 2 years ago, yeah, I would bet on that. But if I was a betting man, and I am sometimes, I'm not putting my money on that. I don't know about that one. That's a question mark for me. That's a tough one.
That's a nope for me. Too many unknowns offensively.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Brian Lewerke, even if you want to give him the benefit of the doubt, let's be honest, Brian Lewerke's even an unknown coming off of his injury, right?
He is.
We don't know who the tight end's going to be. Well, we know Matt Dotson's going to be starting
right.
at tight end.
Right.
But, I mean, he's a question mark in terms of his production, right? We don't know who the running back's going to be. We don't know how Cody White's going to adjust being the number one receiver without Felton Davis in front of him. Nah, I'm not committing to this. Nope.
And Matt notes, it would take a significant jump for a group that scored just 18.7 points a game last season to then jump in the top half of the Big Ten in scoring. So, yeah, I'm leaning towards no on that one as well. But again, if Brian plays out of his mind, we'll see. We'll see. Okay, five here. We'll fly through these last few. MSU returns a kick or a punt for a TD for the first time since 2014.
No.
Uh-uh. That's a huge reach in my book,
nope.
Jack. We are not seeing that whatsoever. You know, the last punt taken back was by, if you had to guess, you don't have the article up, do you, Jack? You do have the article. Oh, you see it
I
there?
Do.
You see it,
I
you
do.
See what it says? The last punt taken back was Keyshawn Martin.
I mean, he's who I would have guessed, though.
Oh,
the last
he was
guy
fantastic.
To run a punt back would have been Keyshawn.
Keyshawn, no relation, by the way. But Keyshawn was the last player that took it back. And that was when I was a junior in college in 2011. I had a few classes with Keyshawn, too. Great guy, by the way. But, yeah, that's crazy. It's been that long.
Potentially, I think Jalen Naylor could run one back. But to be honest with you, I don't even want him running the punts because I see him as such a big facet of this offense this year.
Right.
I don't want him out there running the punts. I don't want him getting hurt.
Yeah, I'm with you on that as well. So, yeah, we both agree on that one as well. Okay, Kenny Willekes doubles his sack total from last season. Kenny is great. Kenny is a great, great player. But that's going to be tough to double, you know, to
yeah, because he already had, I think, eight last year.
He had eight last season. I don't think he can double that to 16.
I'm not going to count out Kenny Willekes.
16 sacks,
I know,
Jack?
But he's so good.
He is so
he
good.
He is so good.
Maybe he'll get, you know, one or two over that, you know, maybe 10, 16.
Oh,
no?
I think he'll get at least 12. At least 12.
Okay, but not 16 is such an astronomical number. That's ridiculous.
It'd be interesting to see when the last time anyone got 16 sacks in college would have been.
Well, if he does that, he'll surpass the program record of 16 set by Larry Bethea in 1977. So that's a long, 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 long time. All right? That's when, you know, my dad was rocking an afro back in the day when he had hair. Okay, Josiah Scott leads the Big Ten in interceptions. He had two in just five games last season after missing the first eight with a knee injury. I'm going to bet no on that.
Oh, I think I could see that happening for sure. I'm big on Josiah Scott. I'm trying to think who's back in the Big Ten. Levert Hill's back for Michigan.
Yep, yep.
Is there anyone back from Ohio State I care about?
Nothing that comes to mind.
Is Jordan Fuller still there, the safety? That'd be the one guy I would see, because their cornerbacks the last couple of years have not been impressive to me. Yeah, it looks like Jordan Fuller's back.
Yeah, he's back. Yep.
So that could be a guy. I don't know. We'll see. I think Josiah Scott is, at a minimum, one of the two best corners in the Big Ten.
He's amazing. He is amazing. I'm just going on my gut here. I don't think that he's going to lead the Big Ten. I'm just going on my gut here. I'm playing kind of devil's advocate. The defense produces three All-Americans. I could see that. I mean, this was an All-American. You know, well, this was an all-time defense, I should say, in Michigan State history last season. And, again, I keep harping on this, but, again, if you just have an average offense to go with that defense last year, who knows what could have happened. So I could see that happening, number eight happening. Three All-Americans, maybe.
Oh, absolutely, because I would already earmark Raekwon Williams and Kenny Willekes being All-Americans. So from there, you basically need one of Josiah Scott, Joe Bocci, or even David Dowell. I could absolutely see that happening.
I can see that, too. And 9 and 10 are big no's for me to close it out. MSU 9-0 heading into the Michigan game. I just get a feeling they're going to have a hiccup before the Michigan game at some point. And returning to the college football playoff, that ain't happening either. So two no's for me there, Jack.
I would actually say 10 is more likely than 9. Because,
really?
Yes.
You think they have a better shot at going to the college football playoff than being 9-0 heading into the
absolutely
Michigan.
The Big Ten's been left out of the college football playoff how many years in a row now? Two or three?
Yeah,
I absolutely think they're getting. I absolutely think they're getting a team in next year. And if Michigan if Michigan State comes out of the Michigan game with still only one loss, because I don't think they're going to be 9-0, but heading into that game, just because, I mean, you see the record here. They travel to Northwestern. They haven't beaten Northwestern in 3 years.
Exactly.
Travel to Ohio State. Travel to Wisconsin.
Yep.
I mean, if they get through two of those three games and then they beat Michigan, that'd be their ticket to the college football playoff. I think that's way more likely than
them. Oh, yeah. Well, okay. When you put it that way, yeah, that is true. I mean, if they're getting to the college football playoff,
that would mean they're only losing one game.
Yeah.
And more likely they would lose one of those three games than they would to Michigan, I would say.
I see your point there. That's a good point, because they play Michigan. That's the third from last game on that schedule. So I see what you're saying there. But, again, at Ohio State, at Northwestern, Arizona State is the third game. And Arizona State comes here this time. That'll be the third game of the season. I'm not sure how good Arizona State is slated to be this upcoming
year.
Well,
I mean, they weren't any good last year, and we lost to them. So.
Yeah, and they lost. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. You just never know. 9-0 going to the Michigan game? No, I'm not betting on that. So those are pretty fun, though. Those are fun pieces.
You think they beat Penn State at home next year?
I think they do.
I think James Franklin is just such a dolt. I think they will again.
You think that you don't like James Franklin?
No.
I think James Franklin's a solid coach.
I highly disagree with you.
And what he's done at Penn State has been
pretty impressive. Saquon Barkley is the best running back college football has had since, at a minimum, Adrian Peterson. And he had Trace McSorley to go with him and Deshaun
and
Hamilton. And they couldn't get to the college football playoff.
Yeah.
That's a failure to me. I hear you.
But I just think what James has been able to do record-wise has been pretty impressive.
Well, sure. But, I mean, I also think people kind of forget that Penn State's not a bad job.
No, it's not.
Like, it's not too tough to win at Penn State. I mean, geographically, you got Pittsburgh and Philadelphia sharing your state.
Yeah, the history that with when it comes to that organization still, you know, even though I know what happened with the Jerry Sandusky scandal and Joe Pye and everything, still, Penn State is Penn State. So, all right, those are interesting. And there is one done for the Michigan Wolverines as well. Don't have time to dive into that. All right, let's hit our first break when we come back. I just want to briefly touch on this bombshell of a piece done by ESPN.com. Also, I'm going to go on our phone lines. I know Jason is waiting oh so patiently. We'll get to his call. And anybody that wants to call in, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. That and more, you are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Before I get to this ESPN.com piece centered on the LA Lakers detailing the drama that has occurred in less than a year, too. It's just a mess. It's a mess out in LA right now. I want to talk some NHL playoffs because game two of the Stanley Cup Finals is tonight. The Boston Bruins, they have a one-game series lead after game one. As you heard Jack and I talk about just briefly near the top of the hour, you know, the Bruins just dominated that game one. You know, they controlled almost every facet of the game.
For 40 minutes.
Right.
The last 40 minutes.
And looking at the stats, Jack, I mean, the Bruins, they out-attempted the Blues by 11 at 5-on-5 play. Yet that number ballooned to 19 when including all situations. So it was pretty dominant. But again, it's hockey. Anything can happen. And the Bruins are hot right now. They are just sizzling hot right now. I don't want to count the St. Louis Blues out because it's only game one. It's early in the series and it's playoff hockey. To get further thoughts on what happened in game one and what could possibly happen tonight, we're going to do like a three-man weave here because I know, Jack, I know you want to make some points, I'm sure, when it comes to the Stanley Cup Finals. But we now welcome to the show a dear friend, the Director of Broadcasting and Media Relations for the Odessa Jackalopes. He is the play-by-play guy of the Jackalopes. He is doing one outstanding job with that team as well. But we now welcome Jason Ruff on line one. Jay Ruff, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing just fine. I'm really looking forward to this game, too, tonight. I'm still trying to process that Torrey Krug hit.
Yeah.
And really, that hit came at a really critical part in that game. Boston had just pulled within one, if I recall, and they were starting to get mojo. And then Krug goes in across the ice, lays this guy out. And really, that just set the place on fire. And like Jack said earlier, the Bruins did pretty much dominate that game for a hair under 40 minutes because up until that point, especially in the first period, it was all St. Louis. I mean, right. You could tell Boston had some rust on their sticks, if you will, going into that game. But as soon as they got that big goal right after the Blues went up 2-0 and we had that Krug hit, momentum just turned on its head and it was all Boston. St. Louis was lucky they weren't run out of the building. If it weren't for their goaltender, it would have been an ugly, ugly night for the St. Louis Blues.
And you go back to the hit just real quick, Jason, because I saw the highlight of that hit. And, you know, I told Jackman, it gave me goosebumps. My goodness. And many are comparing, and a lot of people forget, you know, looking at the highlight, well, not a lot of people forget who saw the hit. Krug also didn't have a helmet. He was helmetless going airborne on that hit. And many have compared it to what? Game one of the Stanley Cup Finals, Blues forward. The four-game sweep of the Blues in 1970. Bobby Orr, I guess, was involved in a mid-air hit without his helmet. And there's actually a statue of Orr hanging mid-air with his stick in his right hand that stands right outside the Garden. And he wasn't wearing a helmet again in 1970. So it's kind of like eerie, right? That's kind of a coincidence, right?
It is kind of. Now, the difference is, Orr was right before he went airborne, Bobby Orr just scored in overtime to secure the Bruins the Stanley Cup. So I don't think Krug hitting that guy in a key point in a game one is going to hold so much weight when you compare the two.
No, but you won't be putting the statue.
It is, but I can see the similarities. And, you know, again, that hit came at a critical time in that game one. You know, we'll see how this series plays out. But I would go back to say if Boston goes on and just dominates the series, which is possible, I don't think it's going to happen. But if Boston plays like they did in the second and third periods on game one and they go on to just really take control and put a stranglehold on this series, people are going to go back to that second period and specifically Torrey Krug's hit and the goal that came before it as the complete turning point in that series when Boston just started to lock it down. Again, all of that pending what happens the remainder of the season. Either way, Krug's hit basically forced, in my opinion, Boston to re-sign him and give him whatever money he wants. Because I know there are a lot of Detroit fans and a lot of your listeners who are Red Wings fans that are hoping that maybe Krug can come back to the D and come back to Michigan. I think that'd be great for the Red Wings. But at this point, I don't think Boston can afford to let Torrey Krug walk after, not only after everything he's done for Boston, but after that hit. And of a magnitude like that, just how much publicity the Boston Bruins and the Stanley Cup playoffs are getting after that monstrous of a hit. It's crazy.
Torrey Krug will never leave Boston, Jason, I don't think.
He's there for a while now, right?
Either, but I'm just saying there have been rumors. There have been people who have been talking.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. I don't think he will either, but I don't think, especially not now.
No. And being a Michigan native, obviously, it always comes back to that with the Red Wings. They're always, you know, seemingly under Ken Holland, they were oftentimes in pursuit and they favored guys, you know, with Michigan roots, Luke Witkowski, the last couple of years. And, you know, given Justin Advocator his big deal. But to your point, I just think Torrey Krug is just far too valuable to the Boston Bruins, especially for his offensive ability as well as, you know, his physicality, even for an undersized guy. I just don't see the Bruins ever moving on from him. I mean, he's part of their core moving forward. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And I will say this because I need to say this. If I hear one more person say that hit was a charge, I'm going to lose my mind.
Well, that's what we were doing.
That was a 110% legal hit.
Well, and that's why I brought it up because I was on Twitter and I forgot to bring it up on yesterday's show. So I brought it up after our intro for today. And, you know, because I saw some people on Twitter debating, you know, and most of them, I think, are Blues fans saying that, hey, that should be a charge where, you know, he should be fine, that kind of thing. And I'm like, what? It looked clean to me. You know what I mean? So and also ask this now, Jason. I mean, Boston now has a win streak of 8 in the playoffs. 8-game win streak. How have they gotten so hot?
You know, I think really they've just stuck to what they are and just really frustrated opponents. The crew at NBC brought it up in game one. You know, they frustrate opponents with their physicality, and this has always been Boston's MO, especially when they're in the playoffs. I think back to when my Blackhawks played them in the Stanley Cup Finals. Boston is a team that tries to get under your skin and really play physical, but they have plenty of skill to also get in that mindset and to really play a high-skill quality game. But they got a lot of guys like Brad Marchand. I was watching a piece on him earlier, you know, when Patrick Sharp, former Blackhawk, was talking about him. He said he was really, you know, Sharp was saying, I know a lot of guys who talk a lot and run their mouth on the ice, but none of them have 100 points in the regular season. That's what Boston is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as much as people not want to see the Boston Bruins and the city of Boston win another championship, I kind of want to see Boston win this one because I really like how they play the game of hockey. They play it hard-nosed, they play it physical, but they also play it really skilled. They're not a trap team that's just going to try to get a one- or two-goal lead and then just hold on for the win. No, they're willing to go toe-to-toe with anyone, both physically and in the skill department. But on the other side of the ledger, you got St. Louis, who they play a really good skill game as well. You look at that Tarasenko line that they had going in that game one. If that line gets hot, St. Louis could have a really legitimate chance. They already have the good goaltending. I think their goaltending has been really solid, as I said. You kept them in that game one. But if they can get that going, if they can get a Tarasenko line going really hot, you know, we could be in for a long series. A lot of it's going to depend on game two and game three, as I always say. Game two and three are usually the most important games in a series. Game four, second most.
Well, and an eight-game win streak is already impressive, but, you know, my jaw kind of hit the floor when I saw this graphic floating around on social media, Jason. A 32-11 scoring margin throughout this eight-game win streak, while what, clicking at 34.5% on the power play, limiting opponents to 3.8% with the man advantage. That's insane, right? Especially in hockey and playoff
exactly.
Hockey to do that. You don't see those kind of numbers. That's insane, Jason.
No, you don't. And it harkens back to what I said. Boston plays a real physical game, but they play a real excellent skill game. They're really good in all facets. They're a great all-around team. And really, it's going to be a tall task for St. Louis to really come back and, you know, possibly win this series, I think. And the other thing you have to remember, Al, that Boston is the last big team left in this playoffs. All the other big teams, like especially out in the East, Washington, Pittsburgh, and out in the West, Calgary, and Colorado made it past the second round. But a lot of the big-name teams that we all thought are in Nashville as well, all the teams we thought were going to be in it at this point, all of them are gone except Boston. St. Louis has kind of been a wild card coming out of the West.
Mm-hmm.
So really, you know, I'm not sure if St. Louis has the firepower to come to really challenge Boston skill for skill. If the one caveat, the asterisk, that unless a Tarasenko line gets hot. If Tarasenko gets a line going hot, I mean, Tarasenko is, in my opinion, a generational talent. He could potentially, a la Alexander Ovechkin, if he gets a line going, could carry the Blues.
Well, the one response I guess I would have to that, Jason, is I absolutely agree with you that Boston is the last, you know, they're the last team still in the playoffs that I guess you would say we wouldn't be surprised to see in the playoffs, right? To your point, you know, San Jose isn't there anymore. Calgary isn't there in the West anymore. Vegas isn't there. You know, Tampa isn't there. But the one point I will make in response to that is, St. Louis has definitely had the much tougher road to the playoffs. I mean, to the cup, I should say. There's no question going through, you know, obviously Winnipeg first round and then Dallas and then all the way up to San Jose last round, who I picked to win the Stanley Cup as opposed to, you know, Boston. To their credit, they've won the last eight playoff games. That's unprecedented in hockey. It does not happen very often. That being said, they haven't had the toughest road. Obviously, Toronto in the first round's an up-and-coming and very talented team. But from there, you played two wild-card teams. So, you know, the one thing I'll say is I don't think you can count the St. Louis Blues out just because, you know, they've already gotten to this point. They've already knocked out some really tough teams that are maybe not quite as good as Boston, but they're not far off.
That kind of reminds me a lot of...
And I agree with you.
And that reminds me a lot of the NBA playoffs, to be honest with you. You know, I had to talk some NBA at one point in here. But, yeah, it reminds me of what the Toronto Raptors, their road in comparison to the Golden State Warriors. So, and also, credit to Tuukka Rask as well, right, Jason? I mean, he's been highly criticized.
Best goalie in the playoffs this year.
Yeah, he's been great in the playoffs. I heard that point made a lot as well. Okay, so with that being said, real quick, what happens tonight in game two?
I think it's going to be a real close game. I think we're going to overtime, but I think Boston's going to take a 2-0 lead going back to St. Louis.
Okay. What about you,
Jack? He's more optimistic than I am. I think St. Louis will come out swinging the first 10 to 15 minutes of this game, but I see probably a 4-2, 4-1 Boston win.
Okay. And I'm just going to sit back and enjoy it. tonight, all right?
You're going to keep your eyes on the NBA playoffs, aren't you, Al?
I'm waiting on it. But, you know, this is when I do watch the Stanley Cup Finals. I love it.
I love
watching it.
I know you do.
There's nothing like playoff hockey. And, you know, they always say this as well, though. I mean, they say this in the NBA as well, man. A series doesn't truly begin until a road team wins. So we'll mm-hmm. see if St. Louis can get that party started tonight, right? Okay.
Yeah, we'll see.
Jay Ruff, thank you so much, man. Outstanding job as always.
Thanks, Al. Thanks for having me. Best of luck tonight. I'm pulling for the Raptors in the NBA. I'm just going to put that out there. I want the Raptors to upset Golden State. Sorry, Draymond.
I do, too. I am so tired of the Golden State Warriors, Jason. I hope they win. I just don't think it's going to happen. But all right, brother. Thank you so much, man.
All right. Take it easy, my man.
All right. Let's get our final break. When we come back, I'll just give just brief thoughts on this whole Magic Johnson an L.A. Lakers bombshell of a story published by ESPN.com yesterday. We will be right back. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. We have just about 90 seconds left. Real quick, and thanks to everybody out there listening. Also, those watching on our Facebook live stream, Deb, Ben, Steven, I see you guys. Ben makes a point about the St. Louis goaltender who's a rookie. Is that right, Jack? He's a rookie goaltender.
I would have to check on if he's a rookie.
Binnington?
He was drafted, and I believe it was... 2015 probably. He's been around the last few years, but I mean, he's never been a big name at all. I'll need to look up if he's a rookie, actually. No, he was drafted in 2012. He's 25 years old. So
okay, gotcha. So he's not a rookie then.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
it all depends on is this his first year in the NHL?
Yeah, let me check on this for you real quick. It all depends with goalies. It usually takes them around 6 years of development before they get into the NHL. So
okay.
Yeah, it looks like he, prior to the season, yeah, he would be a rookie. He had played one NHL game in 2015, 2016. He'd been an AHL regular the last couple of years, and then 32 games in the regular season and 20 games so far in the playoffs this year.
That's pretty amazing.
Drafted in 2011, actually. So
2011.
That gives you a little bit of perspective into the life of goalies, because that's 8 years following his draft, he's a rookie.
Wow, you talk about a grind. That's called grinding your way up. So
it's development, man.
That's development, man. Yeah, for sure. Thank you so much for that note, Ben. And as you hear the outro music, folks, I don't have time for it. You're probably sitting saying, oh, thank goodness we didn't get to it. I do want to touch on it tomorrow, the old L.A. Lakers ESPN piece. But until then, enjoy the Stanley Cup Finals tonight. And we'll see you Thursday, folks. Be easy, people.